your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz, and as always, we will start you out with the headlines that you need to know. It starts with some Browns news, and I know that sounds rare that we got Browns news, but yes, the Browns are working on at least a possible mega deal with defensive star Myles Garrett. So at this point, the Browns and Garrett have engaged in contract discussions. What we know is that they have a couple of years left on the deal for the former number one overall pick, but they've gone ahead and started the conversation. At least now they've started it early. So the Browns picked up his fifth year option. He could follow Carolina Panthers running back Christian McCaffrey, a fellow member of the draft class who saw his contract had ended after three seasons. So no idea yet how it'll work out, but at least for right now, we've almost got at least the beginnings of conversations. I will use this moment to remind everybody, if you look across the board and you look at the highest paid players at each position in the NFL, offensively, defensively, only one, Russell Wilson, has won a Super Bowl. So let's remember when we have these conversations about Super Bowl or Super Bowl wins and quarterback contracts that we seemingly don't apply that to any other position. I'm just saying. Speaking of the NFL, some NFL news today as they've announced that they will, they'll make June 19th a company holiday. NFL offices will be closed on that day. It's called Juneteenth. June 19th, celebrated as the effective end of slavery in the U.S., although the Emancipation Proclamation went into effect January 1st, 1863. It wasn't until June 19th, 1865, after the conclusion of the Civil War, when the last of the newly freed slaves were read President Abraham Lincoln's decree in Texas. So the NFL making that day a company holiday. And last on the headlines that you need to know, Florida has passed it into law. A new Florida law will allow college athletes in the state to make money from endorsements starting next summer. So the governor signed the bill Friday afternoon, adding an expected increase in urgency to the national movement towards creating more opportunities for athletes to benefit from the billions of dollars generated each year by the college sports industry. So this is an actual law now in the state of Florida. This is no longer a discussion. It is in law and it will go into effect next summer. So a quick turnaround for Florida as they force the NCAA's hands. Those are the headlines you need to know. It's First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, ESPN News. You can also just ask your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio. How cool is that? We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the show. Penzo Performance Line. I'm Jason Fitz. We're going to have a real mix today. I want you guys to hear some of the First Take reactions. We're going to get you some of your reactions, my reactions from that. As always, it's First Take, Your Take. But we're also going to have a little fun. I know that the show over the last couple of weeks has been heavy at times, and I genuinely thank you and appreciate all of you guys for letting us walk through the journey that we've been walking through. We're going to keep walking through this journey, and we're going to keep having the tough conversations. But I also want everybody to get a little bit of Friday fun in. So this weekend, we're getting another documentary from ESPN. We've all been excited for Long Gone Summer, which takes a look at the summer battle between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire for the Home Run Championship. And I'm excited for this 30 for 30. I know you're excited for this 30 for 30. It was the summer that frankly got me just mesmerized into baseball. Every time they would cut in, we'd all stand around and watch just to see what happened. So it had us, when we were putting the show together, wondering what you think your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry is of all time. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. In honor of the 30 for 30, I want your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry of all time. Sosa McGwire, Peyton Brady, there's a million different options. Macho Man versus Hulk, like whatever it's going to be, I want your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry of all time. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. That's how you can get in on some of the fun. We're going to start today with some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless runs on the same networks, saves you up to 50%. Get the unlimited plan, 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G, only $45 a month, no contract. Straight Talk Wireless, no contracts, no compromise. The Straight Talk came first from Pete Carroll, who spoke out about the Seahawks and regretting the fact that the Seahawks didn't sign Colin Kaepernick. Rather than speak for Coach Carroll, I want you to hear his words directly.
I don't remember the specifics of why we didn't, but there was nothing about, you know, there's been stuff in the media that because we were concerned about him taking a knee or whatever, that never even came up in our conversations. That was never even an issue for us. And that wasn't true. And so, but in that regard to that one, it was just things didn't work out and we moved on. It was at the time, I don't know, I can't remember what Russ's health was all about, but that's what would have been one of the issues. How was, you know, I always felt like Cap was the kind of guy that was a starting quarterback, like I said way back then, that had we had that opportunity, he would have been a great possibly a great fit with us. And, you know, that's a situation never, we never got to that.
Now, it is easy, obviously, at this point for anybody to say, oh, wish we would have, we probably should have, we could have in this conversation. However, I'm never going to speak for the Seahawks better than Mina Kimes does. You know how much we love Mina here and Mina Kimes, not only one of the smartest football minds we have at the network, but also the most passionate Seahawks fan I've ever met. Mina Kimes, Dominique Foxworth, and Louis Riddick today reacted on First Take about the comments of Pete Carroll.
First, every team passed on Colin Kaepernick, so it is unfair, I think, to single out the Seahawks, given that they were one of maybe two teams, counting Baltimore, that even took an interest. But that said, the reasoning there that Colin Kaepernick was too good to be a backup, right, because he should have been a starter, that's not coherent, especially for a team like Seattle, right? Because some teams with young quarterbacks are wary of bringing in high-quality starters. Like, that's a big reason why Cam Newton doesn't have a job right now. You can agree or disagree with that. But a team like Seattle, where you've got a quarterback who is entrenched, who had won a Super Bowl, who had no trouble, right, asserting himself as a starter, that's exactly the kind of team that should have signed Colin Kaepernick, because if that quarterback gets hurt, you want the best available option. And there's no denying that in 2017, 2018, Colin Kaepernick was the best available option. He was an average starter his final year in the NFL. There's been a lot of misinformation. How good was he? He was average, okay? That means he would have been the best possible backup. So it doesn't make sense for a team like Seattle not to have signed him back then.
Yeah, but Seattle, I think, I understand, and you didn't say this, you didn't, you should kind of recuse yourself from this discussion, because you didn't let everyone know how big a Seahawks fan you are, because it is fair to be a little harder on the Seahawks for the exact reason that you just said. It was a perfect fit there. That is one of the few places where it's a perfect fit, and I think a lot of other people had awful excuses that have no credibility, but in there, it made more sense than anywhere else, because you also go down to style of play, and while I think that teams in the Ravens show us a couple years ago that teams can switch from a kind of traditional pocket passing right. quarterback to a more athletic quarterback mid-season. The Seahawks didn't have that problem. They had an athletic quarterback who could have used a quality athletic backup, and the idea that he was going to threaten Russell Wilson for the starting job wasn't even something that was on the table. And I've never heard a coach, general manager, player, or anybody say, we don't want that guy because he's too good. So I think it's fair to be more a little harsher on the Seahawks. And then for Pete Carroll to say afterwards that he got a call from a team, like, what's that? Why is he going to put that? He also said, I'm not going to tell you who called, but a team called me to try to find out more information about Colin Kaepernick. So I know that's your boy, and I know you're a Seahawks fan, but you have to be fair. They deserve a little extra criticism in this moment, given all the facts that are out there. Back me up, Lou.
Look, every coach and every GM knows exactly why they did or didn't sign players. So for that's the first thing that jumped off the screen to me that he said was, I don't really understand quite why we didn't sign him at the time. But I mean, come on, you know exactly why you didn't sign him. And look, I also understand that, you know, there are different requirements as far as makeup between backups and starters. But in this case, look, I think you could have figured out a way to have Colin be someone who could have supported Russell Wilson and or played if he needed to play, if you really wanted that to happen. I think what's happening right now is there's a lot of revisionist history going on right now. We know that. You know that, you know, when people say that, you know, people right now are trying to be on the right side of things, well, just think about what that means. People right now are trying to align themselves based on how the wind is blowing. And so now I wouldn't be surprised if there's a whole lot more talk coming out now all of a sudden about, well, yeah, you know, we considered signing Cap. You know, well, yeah, he really would have been a good fit for our place too. Yeah, you know, I kind of understand, you know, that, you know, maybe we could have used him too. And you know what? This all reeks of inauthenticity right now. And it's not sitting with me the right way, although I'm not someone who wants to attack Pete Carroll in any way, because I like Pete and I've spent time around him and I really do like him as a coach and as a person. But, you know, to come out now all of a sudden and say, well, a team has called me and that there is some interest. And I mean, look, man, we know what happened. We know what went down. We know that people were making excuses, all kinds of excuses as to why they couldn't sign him. But we know what the primary reason was. And the fact of the matter is this, with the game, the way the game has changed and the way teams are really, really, you know, being forced to adapt in terms of the way they attack offensively, Colin fits into not just Seattle, but many, many offenses. And there were many teams that could have used someone of his skill level and his talent level and his skill set. And they chose not to for the reasons that we all know why.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. And there's some really good points there made, as Mina points out. Everybody obviously passed on Colin Kaepernick. Let me say this, though. So much of the conversation over the course of the last week has been about Colin Kaepernick, and I understand why, because it stands, he stands as a figure that we have so much meaning behind when it comes to the way that the NFL hasn't necessarily handled any of this the right way. I understand that. I do have to say, though, this is about more than just Colin Kaepernick. And the NFL, in the process of what they figure out next, has to figure out two separate things. Number one, how do you finally make things right regarding Colin Kaepernick? Number two, how do you make sure that this discussion doesn't become about one man and instead become something that the entire league can embrace? How do we make sure that we're getting the voice of multiple players from all kinds of backgrounds, a diverse, wide voice that can speak out for the social issues, that can make sure that this message is truly heard? I think there's some group of people right now that are listening that think Colin Kaepernick signing with a team or Colin Kaepernick becoming an ambassador paid by the NFL is suddenly going to be the charge that moves the entire conversation forward. I don't think that. I think that's one component of what must be a much larger movement by the NFL. It can't be as simple as sign Colin Kaepernick and then brush this all under the rug, because if that's all it takes, the NFL would gladly do that and end the conversation in a few months. It needs to be more than that if the NFL truly wants to be a vessel for change. If the NFL wants to use their brand and their power to give a bigger voice to what needs to happen in the world, if they choose to do that, part of what they need to do is, as a league, in my mind, they need to find out how many different ways they can give athletes the podium that the NFL has, the power that the brand of the NFL has, the spectrum of the width of communication that the brand of the NFL has. When they empower players to use the NFL brand and the microphone that comes with it to affect change, not just Colin Kaepernick, but league-wide, that's when they'll actually be accomplishing something. Don't let the obsession over Colin Kaepernick become the overriding issue that's more important than everything else that needs to happen here. Colin Kaepernick is one component, but there's another much larger component that if the NFL doesn't figure out both of them, I'm not sure that they can ever accomplish the change that they're looking for. ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, with more than 30 unique coverage options available. Progressive knows small business. Learn more at ProgressiveCommercial.com. We're taking your take. We're asking you guys to chime in. Your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry of all time. Get in there. You can get in. 888-729-3776. 888-729-3776. I want your greatest athlete versus athlete of all time. We're getting a bunch already on Twitter. You can tweet me at Jason Fitz. As we get several takes for wrestling across the board, I mentioned, you know, maybe it's Macho Man versus Hulk. I didn't realize I was going to be just opening the spectrum of that as we're getting a lot of wrestling tweets on this. Also, some interesting ones that I hadn't thought of. I like John, who says only one of them's an athlete, but I loved Reggie Miller versus Spike Lee and the Knicks in the 90s. Crazy that we've gotten to that spot. So we're going to keep taking your take. Obviously, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on the conversation. In the meantime, I want you to get a little bit more reaction from First Take. So, in addition to what you've already heard, there's been quite a bit of conversation throughout the last several days from Bubba Wallace and what NASCAR meant yesterday. As we talked about it a lot on this show, NASCAR's decision to no longer allow the Confederate flag to be flown. That's largely because of the strong words and take from Bubba Wallace. He joined First Take today to talk about this situation, where NASCAR is, and what he's done with the sport.
The Confederate flag had been such a part of NASCAR for so many years, throughout its entirety. What was it like for you, and what does it mean for you to be a part of getting the Confederate flag banished from NASCAR?
Yeah, it was a big process for sure. And I know about 4 or 5 years ago, they had talked about removing the flag. And this is when I was kind of first getting into NASCAR and kind of understanding my position and role and just kind of getting my feet underneath me. And so I didn't take a huge stance on it like I have today or now. And you know, out of the conversations that I've read of people attending races and attending NASCAR events, you know, they said they enjoyed their time, but one thing that really stuck out to them and made them feel uncomfortable was the Confederate flag being shown and flown proudly, and that bothered people. And I'm just simply saying, like, if people don't want to come back, we're trying to create diverse backgrounds or audiences and have inclusion and unity, then let's just simply remove something, you know, from the NASCAR events, from their property, and allow people to feel comfortable being there, feel comfortable being in their own skin. And we're not saying you have to get rid of them in personal life. You do whatever you want. But when it comes to NASCAR, we own the rights to all that. NASCAR owns the rights to all of that, and they can control the message there. So I appreciate them stepping in behind me and the comments that I said with Don Lemons there on CNN. That was big. So seeing the course of action fall through was good. Follow through.
How's the reaction you've been receiving felt so far?
It's been good. It's been positive. There's obviously the negative people out there that don't want to take the time to understand the message that we're trying to push across. It's the All Lives Matter people that don't want to hear the Black Lives Matter movement. And it's as simple as putting the word or the letters TOO on the end of that, on the end of the hashtag Black Lives Matter 2. We never said, Black Lives Only Matter. We never said that was the only race that matter. We're trying to bring awareness that, hey, we want equality in this world. We are treated differently because of the color of our skin. But people don't want to take the time to listen to that. They wanted to parallel it with lootings and riots and the mass destruction that's going on, and that's just not what we're trying to get across. So but on the other side of that, it's been really positive outreach. I've gained a lot of respect for fellow competitors and received a lot of positive impact from big icons and whatnot, but that's not what it's about. It's about pushing the message together, so I think we're doing that.
Bob, I looked at the replies to NASCAR's tweet, and at first I wish I didn't because it was so upsetting, but I also saw a lot of people coming forward and saying, hey, I've never watched NASCAR before. Maybe now I will. Do you think this will help the sport grow going forward, not only for fans, but also potentially for other drivers?
Yeah, I wish we could figure out why we are programmed to read the negative backlash. That's all we focus in on. I sit there before these interviews, I'm just sitting there scrolling, looking at what's being said from the negative side of things. I don't know why we're programmed like that, but you're right. The comments that have been out there saying, like, I've never watched NASCAR or I never wanted to because of certain things, but now I'm going to, that's what we need. And I've talked to Steve Phelps, the president of NASCAR, about that before going into Martinsville. We had a lot of first-time viewers for that race, and I imagine that's going to keep growing as we go. And that's exactly what we've been pushing for so long, for a new demographic to come in, a new crop of fans. I'm seeing a ton of outreach being poured into NASCAR right now on a positive side of things. So it's special for the sport. It's moving the needle, and I'm proud to be kind of leading that front.
Yeah, we're celebrating NASCAR right now because of them banning the Confederate flag on their grounds. But I think we all agree that's something that should have happened a while ago. So are there other steps that you're looking to take or looking to push NASCAR to address the welcoming of other races and address issues of race within NASCAR?
Yeah, for sure. NASCAR, despite the underlying tones that have kind of been there, the stigma that's kind of been there, NASCAR's had open arms for a really long time of all demographics, all races, all walks of life to come to their sport. But I think with the movement that we're putting together now, absolutely allows that and creates that door to open. Marty Smith said earlier, I read it, and it was powerful, to the fans that don't agree with banning the flag, we're not shutting the door on you. We're opening the door to so many others. And that's exactly what NASCAR wants. We want more people to be a part of this, create, bring in fans when fans are allowed, obviously, but create a new fan base for us and keep going. So the next steps, we are trying to figure that out. We're actually on a call with a couple of us drivers and key leadership of NASCAR on Tuesday. So we're excited about that. I'm excited about that to see what kind of next steps will be in place.
First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm excited to get all the Bubba Wallace gear that I bought in the last few days because this is a gentleman worth supporting with everything you've got. Tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast. Gets you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. We're asking you for your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry of all time. Jeremy in Missouri. Jeremy, what do you got? What's your take?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I think my favorite individual head-to-head rivalry, at least in the modern times, is Federer versus Nadal. They played 40 times. Nadal has won 24 of those. They've played in 14 Grand Slam finals together, and Nadal has won 10 of those. And I think a lot of people believe that Federer is the greatest tennis player of all time, but Nadal, I think, has a really good argument against him. So I love that rivalry. It reminds me of the old, like, Borg-McEnroe, Sampras-Agassi head-to-heads, and those guys are, like, two classic gentlemen competitors, and they're going to be missed when they retire, but in my mind, that's the best one right now.
Love your take on it, and I'm surprised we haven't gotten. We've gotten a lot of the Sampras-Agassi tweets so far, so a lot of tennis love coming in on this one. Myron in Illinois, what's your take on your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry of all time?
Hey, Jason. I would say my favorite rivalry would have to be Manning versus Brady. As far as the modern age, that there's just two legends going head to head, and it seems like they used to always come to the AFC Championship to one of those stadiums. So I would have to say Manning and Brady.
I love the take on it. And look, it was the first one that came to mind for us. And how many NFL fans have just a generation of fandom defined by that rivalry? In fact, coming up next, we'll talk to someone who knows more about the Brady-Manning rivalry than anybody else. He's played in a bunch of them. That's next. First Take Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM, Channel 80, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We're asking you guys to hang out with us on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, 888-729-3776, in honor of this weekend's documentary that we're going to get about the 30 for 30, I should say, about Mark McGwire versus Sammy Sosa, the summer that we always remember. We're asking you for your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry of all time. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry of all time. You can also tweet me, at Jason Fitz. And don't forget, if you're missing basketball, you can tune in tomorrow night for an NBA Classic Game 2 of the 2011 NBA Finals between the Mavs and the Heat, presented by AutoZone. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. It's a lot of fun sometimes to go back and listen to these old games. And yes, it's a reminder of what we don't have right now, but we're getting closer and closer. I want to believe in that optimism. So let's have a little fun and get you guys involved in the conversation. Your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry of all time. Let's go to Zach in Connecticut. Zach, what you got? What's your take?
Hey, thanks for having me. So I'm waiting for the NHL to get back, so I'm going to throw out two Hall of Famers. Or to be Hall of Famers, we've got Crosby versus Ovechkin, both number one picks back-to-back years, and they always see each other in the playoffs. And Crosby comes out on top a little bit more than Ovechkin, but both have the Stanley Cup under them, and both great to watch ever since they've gotten a league. So those are my two.
Hey, I love the take on it. And for anybody that doesn't know, you're listening to a show full of hockey fans. So that was one of the first ones that came up in the conversation that James, producer extraordinaire, and Spencer and I were having as we put the show together. So definitely a lot of love for that. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Eddie in Wisconsin. Eddie, what do you got? What's your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry of all time?
So I was big into wrestling when I was younger, and I used to switch off between WCW and the WWF. I think would switch to WWE. But the reason why I stuck with the WWE was because of the rivalry between Vince McMahon and Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was pure entertainment. I mean, between like Stone Cold driving the Zamboni in, beating the crap out of Vince McMahon in handcuffs, giving Vince McMahon the beer bath, with the giant hose, them teaming up randomly to beat The Rock at WrestleMania, and then Vince McMahon beating him before that at Royal Rumble. The entertainment they brought was the reason why I watched wrestling and a lot of my friends watch wrestling. I kind of stopped watching after Stone Cold left because it's just, you know, during the Attitude Era, it didn't really have the same feel for me anymore. But they were so entertaining to watch week in, week out. The different storylines of them just going back and forth at each other.
Well, I love the take on it, and it shows you how much we I tweet about wrestling, especially 80s wrestling. That's my era, right? That I've gotten so many tweets about different wrestling rivalries in them. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on the fun. Earlier, somebody mentioned the rivalry, I think, that was first to mind for us on this show, and that was Manning versus Brady. We all know about that one. Well, our next guest joins us on the show, Penzo Performance Line, knows a lot about that rivalry. ESPN NFL analyst Jeff Saturday joins us now. And Jeff, we're asking everybody favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry of all time. We weren't surprised to get Manning versus Brady so quickly from the callers in this. And, you know, you and I have talked about this before in different formats, but speak a little bit about what that rivalry was like for you as a player on the field.
Well, let me just say this before I even get into that, Fitzy, because I'm a little insulted that it has to go Brady and Manning as opposed to Saturday and Will Fork or like, if we're really going to classify the biggest moments in sports, I mean, can we not talk about, like, the guys who really do the dirty work? You know what I mean? Like, Manning and Brady don't even play each other, man. You know what I mean? Like, they're not even on the field at the same time. So I'm a little insulted that you would come at me with that already. But, no, I'm just kidding with you. But in all honesty, absolutely incredible, man. Like, to be a part of it, both competitors, good as they are, and the teams that as good as we all were, it was fantastic to even be a small part.
Well, and you're right. You know, Golic Jr. somewhere is kicking me under a table because, you know, I didn't mention the offensive line. And I don't know. You're also right. Quarterback never takes on a quarterback, but we're all suckers for marketing. So when you look at that, like, when you look forward, what in your mind is the next Brady versus Manning sort of opportunity we have as a league?
Oh, man. I mean, I think right now Mahomes is going to be in there. I love the Mahomes-Jackson. I just did a deal the other day where they were comparing those two guys with their teams, and you know, two young MVP QBs, two offenses that are just lighting it up. And so I think with the success of those teams, it would drive a huge opportunity. And the reality is everybody's so young. I mean, I think they're all like 23. I mean, even with Dak, if Mayfield and the Browns would come along, there's so many good young quarterbacks that if one of these teams gets hot besides the Chiefs and can start putting together some success and winning and pushing, I think any of those quarterbacks would be in the MVP conversation because you identify the team with those guys. So I think the sky's the limit NFL wise, man. They're in a great position to create that type of environment. And really, I think it was fortunate, you know, when we were in, we got moved to the AFC South. We had started in the AFC East, and had that happened and we stayed in the same division, you know, it may have been tough to have that Brady Manning rivalry because you play twice a year. One's probably not going to make, you know, those things kind of, play into themselves. So, man, I think just where the league is right now is where it's positioned from a QB play and the stardom of each of them, man. It's pretty awesome.
We're talking to ESPN NFL analyst Jeff Saturday on the show, Penzo Performance Line. Stick there for a second, Jeff, because I think you're right, and we see so much success from young quarterbacks. How much of it is the talent of young quarterbacks, and how much of it then should be given credit to certain coaches that are more willing to adapt their schemes to something that fits a quarterback quickly?
Oh, man, listen, you just hit the nail on the head, man. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, John Harbaugh, the way he adapted his offense when Lamar Jackson came in, the way that Mahomes fit into Andy Reid's. I mean, you know, Dak Prescott in Dallas and what they did last year and all the yards they put in, that's what makes football fun to me. I mean, there's nothing – listen, when it's all drop back QB, you know, 5-7-step drop, everybody's going to look the same. I love knowing that Bruce Arians is going to go play Sean Payton. You're going to see two incredible offenses that are really completely different in style, right? Or that when you're playing, whether it's Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, but you're seeing different offenses. And I'm not saying that they're all completely different. Like, we know Baltimore is really different in comparison, but they all have enough tweaks for true football fans and fanatics to look at it and go, I love to see the adaptation that each coach has to make and each team has to make. And with all the guys who are surrounding these quarterbacks who get all the attention that make them look so much better than really they are at that moment, right? It may be a little dump off pass from Breeze and Kamara takes it 60 yards, or Michael Thomas does this, and no different than when Peyton and, you know, whether it be Edgerrin James running it, right? I may not do a good job on my block, but he goes and busts it for an extra 50 or whatever. But as you're looking at it, you're seeing players' games drive other players' games up, and it's so fun to watch. I mean, I am a true fan of the game just because of the way the game has grown, even the last 3 or 4 years, in all honesty, and the way that I have seen it grow. It's been so much fun to watch, especially as I was coaching in high school, because I got to see how it transcended through college and then now has been sprinkled in the NFL, and more guys are bringing into the fray of their organization.
We're talking to ESPN NFL analyst Jeff Saturday, and I'm sorry, you never blew a block, and according to me, you know, that's, I'm just saying, flawless
by
you. So when you look at the game, the way it's played now, what I'm trying to wrap my head around is when you've got this COVID-19 world and everybody can't be together and the players can't train as a group and maybe they can't run the plays the way they usually would during OTAs, what impact does it make to the game that we'll see when the league does start this fall?
Well, I mean, I definitely think you'll see a pared down version early on, right? And that's going to be because guys can't get on the field. You know, they haven't had those 14 days, 16 days. But I will tell you that the pros, I mean, you know, you saw camera work of Brady and some of the Bucks there out on the field. I rest assured, these guys are getting some time. Now, the younger guys, you know, Tua in my, those are a little tougher. Because when it's player driven and player only type stuff, it's harder to kind of wrap your head around where things are going to go. But I think guys are working towards it. I think from a logistics perspective, it's difficult because offense and defensive line play, you know, there is no social distancing, right? I mean, we're face to face. There's a lot of screaming. There's a lot of communication that is required. And so that part, I think, and that's why I'm telling you, I think it'll be a pared down version because guys, you know, to be able to pick things up, to be able to understand where blitzes are coming from, all of those things, it'll take a little time to get kind of over the curve, you know, kind of over the hump, for lack of a better term, to really get it squared away. But by the time they hit week 4, week 5, which in all honesty is when you're going to find out what type of team you really are, I think they'll all be moving in the right direction and pretty smooth.
Given your locker room experience and the way the NFL has changed even over the last couple of weeks, Jeff, how important is it in your mind that teams have open dialogue and are able to come to some sort of a team feel on where they are on so many of the social issues?
Oh, man, I think it's fantastic. I mean, I said this the other day, and I mean it. You know, I think relationship is what helps resolve racism. And relationships, you know, when you have a true relationship with guys in the locker room and they hear your heart and you hear their heart and everybody's having open dialogue and have these communications and saying, man, what can we do? And we're you know, doing a lot of listening and how can you be a part of things? I think it just opens up for greater relationship and forge longer friendships. And you know, I'm excited to see what comes out of this. I think we're at a very historic moment in our country's history, and I think we'll all look back on this, as painful as it is, for the betterment of our country. And that does not mean they're not going to be tough discussions, tearful discussions, people who are going to have to apologize and say I'm sorry a great deal, all of us included, right? Of hey, how we responded to something, how we whatever. I mean, we're just all going to have to be, you know, people in that locker room who listen to each other and know that we care about about people, man. People matter and relationships matter. And I think that's so important. I hate that our country is going through it because I know it's such a difficult time, but just like anything in life, and the toughest of times is really when you're forged as people. And I think as we come out of this, we'll be better as a country for it.
Beautifully said, man. I appreciate your time, your insight. Thanks for hanging out with us, Jeff. And stay safe, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Love you, Fish. Appreciate you, man. Y'all be good.
ESPN NFL analyst Jeff Saturday breaking down. Great stuff there. We've been asking you guys to chime in with your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry. Don't forget, by the way, Pennzoil Synthetic Motor Oils, that should be your favorite, made from natural gas. Gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil sequence, based on sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. We're going to talk about one of my favorite athlete versus athlete rivalries, plus some of your take on it next. That's coming up. First Take Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 8, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. If you're missing baseball, you can tune in Sunday night for an MLB Classic Game 7 of the 2014 World Series between the Giants and Royals, presented by Progressive Insurance. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Speaking of Major League Baseball, I'm Jason Fitz. We've been asking you guys to chime in. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line with your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry. This coming because this weekend we will get the look back at Sosa versus McGuire on a 30 for 30, a long gone summer. Tristan in Pittsburgh. Tristan, what's your favorite athlete versus athlete rivalry?
Happy Friday, Jason. So Zach in Connecticut stole my original one, which was Crosby versus Ovechkin. Not only did they come into the league together in 2005, but they have had to go through each other through all of their Stanley Cup runs. But if I can't have Crosby versus Ovechkin, I'm going to go with Lionel Messi versus Cristiano Ronaldo. Ever since Ronaldo went over to La Liga and Real Madrid, it has become a worldwide event every single time they play. And this has been going on for years now and presumably years down the road. So, yeah, I really can't think of a more worldwide rivalry than those two.
I like that. You went global with that. I'm all in for that. Look, I'll take it all day. It's not necessarily a rivalry that's hit me the same way. But I like also the fact that Tristan was prepared. He had two. All right, just in case somebody takes one, he could go to a second one. Now, part of the conversation, we're going to keep taking your take. A lot of you guys are on hold. But I want you to hear from Mark McGuire, because Mark McGuire is somebody that we'll be talking about this weekend. He's somebody we'll see as part of the 30 for 30 we're going to see. So this is Mark McGuire on 101 ESPN in St. Louis talking about his reaction when somebody says the 98 season wasn't legit because of steroid usage.
Yeah, well, yeah, come walk in my shoes and tell me it's not legit. So, yeah, that's crazy. It's just, I'm almost like speechless even to comment on that. We talked about it before. It's like, people are going to make comments like that. They're always going to have these naysayers are going to say things. It's to hit a baseball is the toughest thing to do in sport alone. To try to break a record like that, to set yourself apart from anybody in the history of the game as far as a single season home run record, to where your mind can go, it's pretty legit. Yeah, things have happened since then. Yes, okay, I've talked about that, but to understand that where you can go with your mind and you have to hit a baseball, nothing can do that other than you.
That's Mark McGuire on ESPN, St. Louis, 101 ESPN there, with his reaction. And I get it. Like, I'd be fired up about it too, but it doesn't change the fact that perception is what it is around it. That's why I'm so interested to watch the documentary this weekend, because he may want to say walk a mile in my shoes, but even his former manager and Tony La Russa has acknowledged at some point that there is at least a cloud over it. There is some conversation over it. And yes, I mean, hitting a baseball, you're on steroids and you can make the argument all day long, well, that doesn't help you make contact with the ball. But we don't know anything about what it did or didn't affect when it comes to recovery. We don't know anything about what it did or didn't affect when it comes to power. Most importantly, we know that it was cheating. At the end of the day, it was against the rules. So now you have that as part of the legacy, and that's part of what will always cloud that summer. But it doesn't change the fact that you guys know I'm not a massive baseball nut. I remember that summer because every time you turned on the TV, they would cut in on ESPN. They'd stop SportsCenter, and you would just watch the at-bat. And the crazy thing is, it didn't matter if you were a baseball fan or not. What you were watching was so special, everybody stopped and everybody wanted to watch it. We can go in now and question the legitimacy of it, but in the moment, nothing can question the memories that we've had from it. We're going to keep taking your thoughts, obviously, on your favorite memories. More Your Take coming next. First Take Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News.